Some replacement level dudes talking about their home team. Starting a Braves podcast was their daggum dream. They like Nick Markakis, even the long ball. One day they'll have more clout than Ken Rosenthal. Oh, you're listening to that Knockoff Nation podcast show. Oh. Knockoff Nation podcast show.
Heyo, it's another episode of the Knockoff Nation podcast show. I'm your host, Ken Hendricks, and Josh and JT are still at the beach. Today, we're going to complete our interview with the one and only Robbie Jones. He's a senior pastor at PCC, Parkway Christian Center, in Chesapeake, Virginia. He's also started a college baseball program from scratch, built it until they won the NAIA and several other competitions. He is my father-in-law, Robbie Jones. And also, his brother has joined us, Doug Jones, who is an assistant president, I believe. I probably have that all messed up. A vice president, that's probably the right word. Vice president at Tusculum University. Of student affairs, and he was one of the winningest coaches in college baseball history. He coached there at Tusculum for years and has been the athletic director there, and now he's the vice president there, and he's sat down with us, and we talked. Today's episode talks all about them being lifelong Redskins fans. We talk about the 60-game baseball season and things they're excited about, not excited about with that. We talk about all sorts of different things. So, Knockoff Nation, sit back, relax, make yourself at home, and enjoy the completion of this interview. Well, I'm going to shift gears on us again real fast. Both you guys, let's get away from baseball for just a few minutes because I want to talk about something else. Both you guys grew up Redskins fans, and you guys have been hardcore Redskins fans since the time you were born. And now you can no longer be Redskins fans because the only reason I can justify this is that the Redskins are so bad that they are a stain upon Native Americans is the reason they changed the name here. But for you guys, how do you feel about the name change? How does this affect, you know, the world? Everything gets canceled for no reason nowadays, whether or not it meant anything bad or not. How do you guys feel about all the name change and everything?
It's disappointing. I'll tell you, it's disappointing. I guess in the culture we live in, it's almost, I'm not surprised. Let me just say that. Not surprised.
Yeah.
But it's really disappointing being, you know, Redskins fans for as long as we have and lived through the three Super Bowl victories that we do have and the, you know, the five Super Bowl appearances that we've had. But, you know, it was for me, and I thought about this for a long time. It's never had a negative connotation. It was never a racist issue for me. But again, I'm going to justify that by saying I understand the culture that we're in. I guess I'll just have to live with it. But I will cherish the Redskin. You know, Doug and I have gone together to old RFK Stadium, and we've been up there when the stadium was rocking. I mean, there's nothing like FedEx can't compare to the old RFK Stadium. I think for me, thinking about it's a, you know, the NFL, as much as I guess most other sports anyway, I'll say, it's a tradition. You pass it down from one generation. I mean, even my oldest daughter, Ken, Cynthia, you know, she will tell you, even in Falcon territory, she will tell you she loves the Redskins.
She does. She's a Redskins fan. Yeah. I like to laugh at her about it every year because the Redskins are now terrible. Not that I'm not a Falcons fan, so I'm just an NFL fan. I play fantasy based football. After the Falcons lost the Super Bowl, I gave up completely. Once you blow a 28-3 lead, you just give up on all football
fans. But it was a generational thing.
That's all I care about anymore.
You know, our dad was a Redskins fan. You know, I'm a Redskins fan. Doug is a Redskins fan. I can remember, you know, Doug, do you remember the year that the Redskins lost to the Bears in the playoffs, and you were delivering papers. This is how young he was. He was delivering, and the front page was, you know, the score of the game, and he had to deliver that a couple hundred times. And we lived and died with the Redskins.
I would agree with Robbie. I cried. I can remember crying at the bar, sitting at the bar eating college chicken after if we lost to Dallas. I mean, it was just heartbreaking. But I think the word disappointed is a little bit, and I do understand, you know, the culture we live in, but I think all three of us could agree based on where we are with our faith. You know, I see all the protests and I see the riots and I see Black Lives Matter and I see all of these things. I've had to share this with our athletes, right? And my message to them, with all this going on, lives matter, right, Ken?
Yeah.
Because,
the
last time I checked my Bible, it says that we were created in His image. So,
I don't
see color. I don't see cultures and I don't see that. And Robbie has transformed churches. I would say a church, but churches in his time there in Virginia. We don't see color.
No.
It's not that. So that is disappointing because I think it's been influenced by what's going on in society today. It's a tradition. It's not disrespectful. I don't mean to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's not disrespectful. It's never meant to be disrespectful. The only thing I started to tweet, and I don't spend a lot of time on Twitter, but as we're changing the name, is there any chance we could change the owner? I would
100% Yeah. The thing, you know, we talked about this on the show a few weeks ago when they were just first talking about the possibility of changing it, and we went and did some research, and so the name came from, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with even the roots of it, but when the owner first bought the Washington franchise, it was the Boston Braves, and it was the Boston NFL franchise, and to not get confused with the Boston Braves baseball team, he changed the name to the Redskins, which at the time had 6 Native American players, including their star, on the team who were Native Americans. And so it never was it meant to be derogatory. I mean, why would you brand something that you're trying to promote as being the best in the league negatively?
Well,
that makes no sense
to begin with. The whole issue for me is we've lost the beauty of passing things down from generation to generation. Only do I think currently is there probably a few that get, you know, upset because of a name, whatever. But they don't understand, and this is just my perspective, they don't understand of the longevity of being a fan of a team and supporting that team to ups and downs and things like that. And so I really feel like that it's going to be different. And I've heard red tails and all kinds of stuff. But I don't know how I'm going to be able to identify with that team in Washington like I have done over the years. It's gonna be, and honestly, Ken, some of that has to do with the culture. Again, to bring it up with sports, you know, one of the things that I think free agency has hurt you're talking about the Redskins. Yeah, Joe Gibbs won three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks, but he won three Super Bowls with the Hawks, the same offensive line.
Yeah.
And right. you understood, you know, Bostic and Grimm and Joe Jacoby, you know, Stark and those that offensive line, you know, and Joe Bugle just passed away, who nicknamed them the Come On Hawks. And so you built that longevity because of your respect for an organization, for a team. And I just feel like we've become so sensitive, overly sensitive, I should say, overly sensitive
yeah.
that we've lost some of the truth in what it really means for to pull for a team for multi-generations. You know, there was a time, and Doug right. probably remembers this, there was a time that you could not buy a season ticket to a Redskins game. Those tickets mm-hmm. were willed from generation yeah. to generation. That was the only way you could get a ticket if they, you know, parents would will it to their children. And so, you know, that's how precious those tickets were. And you can't even hardly buy a ticket to a Redskins game. Now you can't give them away. And it's not,
yeah.
you know, because yeah. teams go through bad seasons and bad stretches and bad decades. But the Redskins were bad a long time ago. When,
yeah.
And people still came packed and it out.
Packed it out.
Yeah. And I think what grieves me as much and what disappoints me is that generation are, you know, can't be passed down. And I'm sad about that.
Well, I saw somebody tweet this week and I thought it was kind of funny is not the right word, maybe morbidly funny, but it's to honor Native Americans, we're going to completely remove every reference yeah. to them from our nation. You know, I mean, that's like in the name of honoring them, we're removing them from one of the sport's biggest things. You know, the thing we talked about on the show is that Redskins is not inherently derogatory. There's nothing about that. I mean, it's literally was a reference to the color yeah. of their skin. Like, that's like saying black man, you know, like something we haven't heard, but when we've read all about it and tried to research it, there's no derogatory thing intended by it. There's also, I would understand if there was, like, a caricature that was somehow accidentally racist, like Chief Wahoo kind of was with the Cleveland Indians, and they kind of moved away from that because it kind of had that whole old-timey stereotype of big lips and large, you know, it not being appropriate. It was a slightly mocking caricature of a person, but like the Redskins don't have that. Like, they literally have an Indian and a spear, and like that's it, you know, like that's who they were. And so I don't know.
I think Snyder caved, honestly. I think
well, I don't think he had a choice. I mean, Nike said we're not going to carry any of your stuff. FedEx said you're not going to play on our field with our name on it as the Redskins. I mean, I don't really know what choice he had. I mean, I guess he could have fought it, but that's a lot of pushing power.
I'm anxious to see, and Doug, you may have some take on this. I'm anxious to see what the fan base is going to do.
Yeah, it's very curious. But I do agree with Ken. I think we live in a climate where, because we all remember what 2 years ago it was, or three, that he said, you can put it in caps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We will not change right. the name. And money right. talks. So I agree. I think the traditionalists like us, Robbie, are really going to struggle with this this decision.
It's hard to pull for a team that you have no identity with, and so we don't really have that identity that we've had. I mean, listen, you know, when I played, you know, little, you know, youth football, I wore number 9 because Sonny Jurgensen was you know, the quarterback of the Redskins. And that's way back in the day with George Allen's coaching and those kinds of things. And see, I remember watching Super Bowl VII and the undefeated Dolphins beating the Redskins. So I'm anxious to see. And there may be a whole new fan base, but.
And that's what I would think that's what's going to happen is I think if anything, they're going to have to try to almost create a new fan base because it's like the Nationals and the Expos. It's like when the Expos came to Washington, they became the Nationals. But that's now we mock them because they try to claim the world championship from the Siders from way, way back. But that's actually the Twins organization. So that's ridiculous. You're not the Twins. You're the Nationals. And you were the Expos. And you never won a World Series until last year. So, I think the Redskins are kind of like in the same position where you're not the Redskins anymore. You're a different organization now. Even if you're not, it's going to feel and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people 2 years from now won't even recognize that it's changed and everybody will be bought in and forget about it and go on. Maybe we're that.
I don't know that's going to happen in Virginia. I don't
that's
know
kind
that
of
that's
the way I feel.
Happen.
You know,
I mean, that's kind of been our team. And you know, of course, the people who didn't pull for Redskins became Cowboy fans because we always talked about the Redskins. But I'm anxious to see what's going to happen.
If Snyder wants to win, you know what he should do, Robbie? He should name them the Washington Monuments and roll with it and see how people feel about the Monuments as their team name and, you know, just see if that upsets anybody. But he did what everybody wanted, and he changed the name, and then he made it the Monuments. I think that would be fantastic. In today's culture, just basically say, I changed the name. There you go, guys.
if you stink on the field, it doesn't change.
you guys are still waiting for Albert Haynesworth to really make a difference in this football team.
Well,
Doug, let me pick your brain for just a minute. The Braves this year, they drafted one of your boys, Carter Linton, right-hand pitcher from Tusculum. What do you know about him? Like, most people are like, where's Tusculum? Like, I saw these Brave stats guys that follow. They're like, does anybody know anything about Tusculum? I'm like, I do. I know something about Tusculum. what do you know about your right-handed pitcher that went?
First of all, really good kid. And his dad's in the baseball business and in the scouting business. And he understands, the game and how it works, but, probably 6'2", right-hander, arm works pretty good, ball comes out pretty good, had a good year for us this past year with Coach Steele, and he still needs to learn how to pitch, right? Mm-hmm. He has a little bit of what I call macho man disease, and you get to that next level and you realize that if you just throw 92, 94, 95, a lot of times you're asking for a new baseball, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you pitch in the middle of the plate, you're going to get – so he's got a little bit of that. But when he's under control and he's pitching at 92, 93 and hitting spots and the breaking ball's got some play with it, the slider's pretty good. He's got some potential. And it's simply for me, does he really learn how to pitch?
Yeah.
You referenced Greg Maddux. Is there a better example of how that just knew how to pitch? So if he can figure that out, and I think developing the third pitch and the changeup is going to be really key for him. But the arm does work pretty good. He pitches up in the zone a little too much, and that's not going to translate to the next level. So it's about location and really developing that third pitch and staying under control. But really excited for him. Really good kid. So we're hoping that he has some
success. Yeah. That's awesome. Now, you guys a few years ago had another guy drafted by the Braves at the time, and it was actually thought he was really close to coming up, and then I think he had some arm trouble and maybe got nicked up a little bit and then ended up, I think, retiring. But what was his name? I don't have it here in front of me.
Devin Watts.
That's it, Devin Watts. Yeah, and I remember we were really excited about him when he was first drafted. Even some of the prospect guys were like, this guy's got kind of a fast track. He may end up in the pros pretty quick. And then suddenly we didn't hear anything from him. Next thing we know, he's retired, and it kind of leaked out that maybe he had a little arm injury or something.
He had a little bit of issue at the end, and he really is one of those guys, and we know how that works. He got caught up in the numbers game. I mean,
yeah,
you know, that system was just loaded.
Loaded, yeah.
With the arms, and kind of sad, but just an unbelievable kid, and did have a little bit of arm injury at the end, so he's kind of moved on. But yeah, he had a really good run with him for a while.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you telling us a little bit about Tusculum. Now I know you're kind of like centered in the mountains up there a little bit, and in your neck of the woods is a lot of minor league baseball, right? Like, I mean, there's a good bit of minors right there close to you, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, within 30 miles, we probably have six different Appalachian League teams, which, you know, you're well aware that looks like they're going to be disbanded and done away with. So, yeah, a lot of talk in this part of the country, unhappy people that have invested some money in some state. Well,
oh, yeah.
You referenced ours. It's a $10 million facility. So we've had the Astros and now the Reds and here during the summer in Appy League. But, you know, Johnson City, Bristol, Kingsport, Pulaski, Elizabethton, all of those within an hour and a half radius of us that look like, anyway. And we'll see how it goes after the collective bargaining thing comes up at the end of this season. But looks like that the athlete league's going away. So a lot of disheartened people in the area and the community about that.
One thing we were curious about, Doug, and we were kind of talking about this last week and trying to look at it objectively from different sides and different viewpoints. For college baseball, we felt like shrinking the minors could be a good thing for guys like you, for guys even – it's going to be a trickle-down effect, but basically you're moving back to more of a football model so that the football – in football right now, that is the minor leagues for the NFL. There is no other minor league program that's going to develop guys to go play in the NFL. In Major League Baseball, it looks like that's what they want to move more towards. Now, they're always going to have – baseball is just a different sport, so there's going to always be a need for some kind of minor league system. But it looks like they're wanting to push, you know, instead of having six minor league teams, maybe have three and push those lower three back into college baseball of sorts and try to, one, shrink the draft so that the draft isn't so large and you're drafting 300 players to come in and half of them get cut next year that you gave signing bonuses for really no reason and push those guys back to college level. How do you see it? You're on the other side of it. You can kind of see both sides of it. How do you think this affects like college baseball versus your independent leagues and Appy League and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think from a Major League Baseball, minor league baseball standpoint, from a business model, it makes some sense, right? I don't think anybody can argue that. And if you look at the attendance and the average attendance upon the Appy League and some of these short season, it's not real good. So I think from a business model, a lot of that makes some sense. I do think it will strengthen college baseball. And let's please not fool ourselves. You know, Tim Corbin's a great friend of mine at Vanderbilt, and you can't convince me that they don't do just as good of a job at Appy League.
Right.
It's going to do with developing their players. And that's just.
Oh, better. Vandy's putting more money than the Braves are into an Appy League team. You know, I mean, they've got TrackMan data. They've got all that stuff every game. They've got StatCast stuff. They know the spin rates, all that at Vandy. And the Appy League game ain't got none of that. There ain't none of that sitting at the Braves Appy League game, you know?
So I do think it will strengthen college baseball. It's going to strengthen the junior college. I think you're going to see a resurgence at the junior college level. Just as COVID, I think, is strengthening junior college athletics because everybody's a little bit unsure of what the next step's going to be. So I do think it will, and I think it will be a trickle-down effect. So I think you'll see Division II get better because Division I can't take as many. You're going to see three get better. You're going to see NAIA get better. And you're going to see junior college get better. So from that standpoint, from the college point of view, I think it's a win-win. And I do think some of these major, you know, these Power Fives and different conferences do an unbelievable job of developing players that are going to be ready to move on maybe to a single A as a starting their career at an Ivy League level.
Yeah, we've kept up with a lot of the stuff that guys at like Driveline. I don't know how. I'm sure you've heard that name and talked about them and with your programs and like what Kyle Bodie and those guys. You know, he's now working with the Cincinnati Reds, but what he's built there at Driveline, he's basically held hands with Vanderbilt and Oregon State and Oregon and those guys and building their programs and you know, developing this high tech revolution in college baseball. How much of that high tech has trickled down to your level? Like, do you guys have a lot of that affect what goes on at Tusculum?
Yeah, I mean, Coach Steele, who coached with me, and Coach Ireland, was with me for all 20 years, basically. And Coach Steele, 14 of my 20. Coach Steele took over the program and I stepped aside. And we've invested in Driveline. I just signed a requisition today.
That's awesome.
Two of our coaches are taking Driveline courses, right?
That's great, yeah.
So and we are track, you know, we have TrackMan. I signed a contract last year. We have TrackMan in our state. So it's a different kid, right? So
yeah.
Now we want to say, you know, I know in the past I told you you're breaking ball stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got a better mirror now. Your mirror's even cleaner than it was before.
Yeah, that proves in the pudding. So, yeah, we have truly invested in that way of going from a coaching standpoint. So it's been really beneficial for us.
It's a weird thing how technology is changing all of sports. Like, I look at the golfer here. What was it, 2 weeks ago? What's his name? Bubba?
Bryson DeChambeau.
Bryson DeChambeau. Yeah, that's it. Bryson DeChambeau. The dude's driving the ball 450 yards, it feels like. Amazing off the green. He does everything right. He's super strong. He's super huge. He looks like a pro baseball player playing golf out there. I mean, maybe even like a linebacker or something. He's a huge guy. And then I see a picture of him at home or a little video, and he's wearing motion capture sensors on his arm. He's got a camera set up behind him that's tracking his swing, and he's standing on weight shift plates that keep up with how much his weight shifts from his back foot to his front foot. And I'm like, that's cheating. Like they never, Jack Nicklaus never had that. He went and played golf, you know, like, but it's not, I mean, it's really just showing how we can really learn to, like you say, put a better mirror up for people so that they can see themselves. But it is, and we talk about this on the show a lot of times, it is making it so that I worry, have we gotten to the point that production is all that matters anymore? And I think in the past we said production mattered, like the guy that produces is the one we want on our team and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, I think you guys have talked about all night as we've talked, is it's not just the stat line production that matters. It's the culture he creates. It's the pieces that he does. It's his understanding of the game. It's all of that. And I wonder how much all of our sports now is all about who can drive the ball the longest and be the perfect athlete. And for me, that's a boring story. Like, if we're going to do that, let's just get robots to play the game and not enjoy the guy that, well, the lefty. You know what I mean? Like, if you watch golf right now, some of the most entertaining guys are Bubba, is out there shanking a ball into the woods and then hitting some kind of crazy, basically shanking it back and putting it on the hole with some kind of ridiculous shot. I'm like, that's a story. That's interesting. That's a guy that didn't do it all exactly right and yet somehow came up with it. That's even Tiger Woods. Like, Tiger Woods, even when he was great, like, he's never been a phenomenal fairway hitter. He's never been, like, phenomenal at hitting fairways. He's been an amazing recovery golfer his whole career. He's always, no matter where he put the ball, he's always recovered and put it in play to be able to putt, you know? And I wonder if sports are getting that way. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm, like, out in left field here. What do you guys think about how technology is kind of affecting the different sports?
Well, it's definitely affecting it. I'm kind of like you. I like the underdog story. I like the guys who really – you know, you know, if technology can make you better, I get it. But it, as long as it doesn't, the playing field has always got to be equal for me. That's I think that's the key, is that you never want to get to a place for me is to have the have and have nots. Because when you have that, I think it's an, to me, it just changes the landscape of sports and everything that we're doing. So I'm kind of in favor of using the technology and using all of that. But I also just want, I don't want it to become so technical that it takes the skill away. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think that's for me, that's you've crossed the line a little bit. And I think golf is a great example because, see, I grew up playing with woods in my dream. And now I think the equipment is so sophisticated and so good that those golfers, they can't build a golf course.
I change drivers. You know, I'm not a good golfer. You know that. We play together sometimes. I change drivers and pick up 40 yards. You know, like, that's not me. I didn't get a bit better. I just changed the club I was hitting it with, you know, and that's where technology gets weird. Doug, what were you thinking? I saw it look like you were going to say something there.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think technology always has a place, and I think it can be extremely beneficial. But you can't lose the feel.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's the biggest difference. You mentioned Tiger, and you mentioned and you can't lose the competitiveness that it really, and the drive that it takes. But you got to have a feel for how to play any game.
Right.
And I hope that of the technology that we're using, I think it's really good. But the technology's not going to teach you how to run the bases. The technology's not going to hit behind a runner and execute a bunt. So you can't take the instinctive part out of the game. And I think if you look at a Bryce DeChambeau, he's so scientific, I can't even think about that dude. Right?
Yeah,
he does.
You just can't lose the feel, I guess, of what it takes to be a competitor and how to play the game. So it does have value, but once you lose that aspect of it, you take the fun out of it.
We talked about it with NASCAR on the show a few weeks ago, and that is, for us, NASCAR kind of died about 2003, 2005 when they brought in the car of tomorrow, and everybody started driving cars that were all exactly the same. And so there was no uniqueness to the sport. That everybody just drove the same car, and they said that would make talent show up, but it really didn't. You just felt like there was a bunch of different guys out there, and whoever got lucky enough to be out at the right time and make the right strategic move. It wasn't really about driving or racing anymore. It was just about using the right strategy so you had enough gas and tires at the end of the race to be the winner. You know, that's not fun. And people started leaving the sport and stopped watching, you know, over time. I think the same kind of thing happens with baseball.
And again, I think, I was never the most talented player whatsoever. But the thing I always took pride in was I used to think the game. And I think if technology ever takes the mental capacity away from the game, that players are just kind of doing it out of, being robots, as you said. I think sometimes we lose sight of really watching guys develop. And that's, to me, that's the greatest thing, watching kids just get better every single day.
Yeah, I think what Doug was saying earlier, I see it so much in baseball, is guys have used the technology and they've used the training to get the best pitching arsenal they've ever had. I mean, Mike Foltynewicz has some of the most amazing pitches, probably far better pitches in some ways than some of the greats that I've seen throw, even Hall of Famers. I mean, Mike Foltynewicz, his arsenal is far better than anything Jack Morris ever threw. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm being 100% honest. But he doesn't know how to pitch. He doesn't have a clue
how to sequence pitches, how to think. And we were actually told by somebody behind the scenes that he probably wouldn't know how to tie his shoes if somebody didn't, like, walk him around. Like, he doesn't know how to actually play the game exactly like you were talking about. And he could throw the pitch, but he doesn't have any of the mental capacity to think through, okay, I'm in the first inning, I'm setting this guy up for the sixth inning. No, he's, like, trying to survive.
Well, I think you know, being a coach, teaching kids to think the game, you're always one or two steps ahead of what's actually happening. And I think to me, that's what makes sports as great as it is that you're thinking. I think, you know, when I think about Joe Gibbs as a coach, you know, to me, that's always, you know, he wouldn't go home at night. He would spend his nights in his office. But come Wednesday, he'd walk in and he'd say, hey, guys, I've got the game plan and it's going to work. And he would just convince his players that, man, we've got this. And it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Well,
right? I think that's, you know, you mentioned Jack Morris and you mentioned all these guys that got great stuff, but you can't define it. The factor.
Right.
The great ones have the it
factor.
And some of the other guys just, they got all the tools, but they don't have what it takes right here.
Yeah.
When you point to another area. But they don't have what you got to have right there. And I always call that the it factor.
And those guys end up down 9-1 in a fifth, in a playoff game where it's all on the line after the first inning. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it. I mean, you go to the Braves this last year, went to a playoff game, a deciding game against an inferior team. The Cardinals were not near as good a team as the Atlanta Braves, and you're down 9-1 after the first inning because Folty doesn't have it, you know. And I've been the biggest Folty fan, but he doesn't have it. It like comes down to it. And now maybe he develops it, but he didn't have it then. You know, he definitely didn't have it then. I'll kind of wrap things up on this note, and we'll close out because I've held you guys for a long time tonight and really enjoyed it. This is my two fun episodes. But looking at a 60-game baseball season, there's only 60 games, and way more than ever before. You know, it's kind of crazy to think, okay, if you figure most teams are going to win 20, they're going to lose 20, so you literally probably have 20 games that make the difference in whether or not you win your division, you're a playoff team, or whether you're, like, picking first in the draft next year. Like, how do you guys see a 60-game season? Is this even a legit season in your mind? Like, do you even, like, is this just a spectacle for a year? Like, how do you guys feel about a 60-game season, and are you looking forward to it or not? I know, Doug, I don't even know how much you get to watch Major League Baseball anymore, so.
Yeah, my schedule's a little crazy, but I'm almost a little bit intrigued again because I think you're going to see, you're really going to see the cream of the crop managing wise come to the forefront here because you're going to have to use guys. So, if you're playing 162 and you run into a 5 or 6 bad game stretch, okay.
Right.
Now, that's a whole different animal. So, how do I use my starters? How do I position my. So, I used to teach our guys. And I think that's what you're probably going to see, I hope anyway, out of a 60-game season. 162 is too long.
I agree. Yeah.
So what I used to tell our guys this is that we're 0-0 and tomorrow's the championship game.
Yeah.
If we won 10 in a row, we're 0-0 and tomorrow's the championship game. So every single game is kind of that.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm not really worried about who's going to pitch tomorrow because the Lord may come.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah.
So, we're going to try to win today. And so I'm a little bit intrigued and, to be quite honest with you, a little bit excited because I think it's going to be a completely different strategy of how you have to manage your bullpen, how you have to manage your starters, maybe a little bit, you know, the rest for position guys, maybe that goes away a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Because I think you're right. You're probably 20-20. I got 20 to go. But I really think those who treat it like every game's a championship game are probably the ones that will come out. So you're really going to see who can manage.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit excited about it.
Basically, you're giving Major League Baseball a college baseball season. I mean, it's really what you've done, you know. What do you think of it, Robbie? I know you're kind of a purist, traditionalist, that kind of thing.
I'm intrigued. You know, I think it's going to be a mad dash. I think it brings some teams that maybe would be a year or two away. They could. I tell you what, a 5-game winning streak is huge in the 6-game.
I'll tell you, teams like Tampa Bay and San Diego are scary teams to me right now. Like they've got talent. They can put it all together. And Tampa Bay, the only reason they don't win the East every year is they run out of games. And what I mean by that is, like, they have, like, a third of the budget of any other team in the AL East. And yet they'll whoop the Yankees in the early part of the season or at some stretch. They'll win a whole bunch of games. And then it's like they run out of gas somewhere late in the season and usually fall back right towards the end of the year. 60 games, it feels like it's, like, designed for Tampa Bay.
I think you're going to see teams like Oakland. I think you're gonna see some teams that really, you know, I think Doug hit the nail on the head. You'll see who can manage and really pull the trigger a little bit, you know.
I wonder if the Rockies are going to have a big season, not having to play in the cold in the early part of the year. You know, they're not having to fight any snow during the season. It's already warmed up in Colorado. They get all their little normal benefits without that early season lag that they sometimes have. I kind of wonder if Colorado doesn't, like, they're not like a little sneaky play out there in the West. And,
but it's going to be interesting.
Meanwhile, the Giants are fighting dead heat.
It's to me almost every week is going to be like the last week of the season, and you're going to be going at it full speed. And so we'll see.
I mean, you open the season 9-1. Can you imagine what kind of, like, I mean, even 8-2, you open the season on that kind of streak, doggone. You got a good lead, you know, and I mean, it can evaporate, but that's a big deal, you know.
That's what Robbie hit on it. You put together a 5-game win streak and a regular season, right. Put together a 12-game.
Everything's double or more, and so it's gonna be an interesting. I just hope that they get to finish it. That's the worst thing that could happen is that, you know, these guys start and all of a sudden everything falls apart. And I think it will hurt baseball more than the other sports.
I agree. I think the owners were somewhat truthful, and owners, we know they're greedy to some extent, but I think they're somewhat truthful when they were saying they really didn't want to play baseball this year because they it's a lot of risk that everything can fall apart and it gets shut down and they're out, you know, and it not just they're out this year's salaries and all that kind of stuff, but they're out big brand wise in how it hurts the game and that kind of thing. And players want to, you know, and players and writers, we've talked about it on the show before, players and writers wanted to blame owners for being greedy and not just playing the game and all this kind of stuff. And now I'm seeing the same writers say, I can't believe we're trying to play baseball with COVID and with all these people getting infected. And I'm like, wait, you just said owners were greedy. Why don't they just play the game? And now you're against the owners for doing exactly what you wanted them to do. You know, I'm not defending the owners because they certainly have their greedy moments, but that was, I feel like there's a lot of risk, and I agree with you. I think it's a super exciting, like Doug talked about. I think there's some elements of it that are really interesting. I don't think, Doug, you've talked about baseball being 162 games being too long. 100% agree. Like, in a regular season, from about July 15th through September the 1st, like, I'm ready to check out. Like, I'm done. Like, even as a fan, I'll watch a game or two a week, but, like, I'm not sitting there every night watching the Braves play, especially not if they're on the West Coast trip. Like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to stay up and watch a game that late because I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter. There'll be 159 more of them, you know? And I think, like, a sweet spot would be about 135, 140 games would probably be a sweet spot. But I'm kind of interested to see what happens with, like, a 60-game season and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you just think about now as a fan, you sit around and think, man, we lost two straight. I'm watching tonight. Yeah. We can't afford to lose three straight.
Right, right.
So it's a whole different dynamic. And it's for a fan, I mean, I will probably watch more than I would in a 162.
And I think the fact that they're playing inner division more I know it's probably not. I think that's what's intriguing. Is, you know, you have the rivalries and things like that are more interesting. So I think that's going to bring some excitement to the game.
I'll tell you the most exciting thing to me, Robbie, is going into the playoffs, and the Yankees have not played an AL West team all year, and they get to play them in the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? So the American League hasn't even played other divisions. So you don't have any preconceived notion of how this is automatically going to go, that the Astros are automatically going to whoop this AL East team, because we don't have that comparison, really. You've only seen them against other things. And for me, the playoffs sound like I'm not in favor of, like, huge expanded playoffs most years. This year, I would be a big fan of them expanding it and making it as big as possible, because I think – that would just be a blast to watch. Almost like college. It's almost like college going to the tournament. No, not even college level, like basketball. Okay. College basketball, it would feel like March Madness almost in the playoff, because you don't know. That's part of the intriguing thing of March Madness to me, is you're getting Duke playing Oregon and they haven't played all year, you know, or Wisconsin playing Texas and they haven't had a game against each other all year, you know, and you don't know how those teams are going to match up. You've seen them play in their division, but you don't have any idea how they're going to match up. It's part of the reason I hate cross-conference scheduling in baseball now at the MLB level. I hate AL playing NL as much as they do. You know, interleague games are just, ugh.
Right, that's a great point.
Well, fellas, thank you so much for hanging out with me. Thanks for recording a podcast with me. I know you've taken a lot of time out of your night tonight to do that. Doug, thank you. I definitely want to get you back on the show sometime when the guys are here so we can have some fun one-on-one with you and dig in some more. But I wanted to get you and Robbie on to tell some stories and hang out together. So thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, Ken, thanks so much, man. It's been a blast. We could do this all night. It's been a privilege to be on with you and my brother. So appreciate you having me, and be glad to join you anytime.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely have you back sometime. And like I say, my partners in crime, they're the crazy ones. They're at the beach this weekend, so they've been hanging out. Robbie, we appreciate you being with us. Thank you so much. Knock-Home Nation, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/Knock-Home Nation. Become a patron. Join the nation. Fight the stat heads. You can do it. And become a patron and support the show. If you'd like to get some Knock-Home Nation gear, t-shirts, all that kind of fun stuff, you can do so at shop.spreadshirt.com/Knock-Home Nation. Get your own Knock-Home Nation shirts and all that fun stuff. So, guys, thanks so much for hanging out. Robin, thank you for hanging out with us. And we had a blast. So we'll catch you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the nation's leading replacement level podcast. Knock-Home Nation is brought to you by Knock-Home Nation patrons. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/Knock-A-Home-A-Nation. For new episodes and content, visit knockahomanation.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @NakahomaNTN. Special thanks to research assistant Braves Options Guy and spiritual advisor John D. Howard. See you next week, knuckleheads.